All right, so good morning, everybody. Welcome to our exam cram session for test 7465. My name is Armando Lacerda, and I have three goals here with you in the next hour or so. I first want to motivate you to get certified, to take the test. I want to give you some tips and what to focus when taking this particular test, the 465. And also give you some resources, some extra resources on the slide decks. Talking about the slide decks, they will be available for you to download online, right, from the TechNet website. If you'd like to have a copy here after the session, you're welcome. I have my flash drive here, my thumb drive, so we can copy straight to your Surface you have acquired the one. Otherwise, if you have a flash drive, you can plug to the computer here and copy it to you. Okay, so these are the four topics we're going to be covering today: the certification overview, the specifics about our exam, the 465. Intermingled with it, we're going to have some real exam questions. Not actually, right? Like the real exam questions, they are under NDA, so I just make up some so that from the surreal world. They're real, but from the surreal world. And then at the end, we're going to have some couple slides about exam tips where you can go to find more resources and talk to people. I actually stole some slides from Mike, who was here before me. He got some extra resources I couldn't find, and so I'm giving them to you too. I strongly suggest you to go back to Mike's session. I was talking to this lady here there in the back before we get started. And all these sessions are being recorded, as you know, all other sessions, so you can go online and receive some DVDs later and watch these sessions, all right? Very cool. So my first goal is to motivate you to get certified. Let me see here. How many here have taken tests already, are already certified in some technology, Microsoft technology, or any other technology? Yeah, feel good. Good number. Very cool. So the rest of you have not yet taken a test. So let me tell you a little bit of my story to see if I can motivate you to get that. I'm from Brazil, and I started there in Brazil working with PCs, like old PCs. And then I got hired by this Microsoft partner and who wants to have someone certified in SQL Server. Back then was SQL Server 6.5. So I started taking the classes and I started studying. And back then there was no Bing, no Google. Am I allowed to say Google here? No Bing, no Google, no MSDN online. There was nothing. Just, you know, the books you could find and the documentation in the products. So I started reading through these things and I started getting ready for my tests. And I actually was in the team, the first 20 people down in Brazil who got certified in SQL Server 7.0. Which was the very first SQL Server developed by Microsoft people, right? So that was great. You know, I got certified. I started working on the field. And by being certified, I was able to make it to Chicago in 1999 for the SQL PaaS conference, the very first one. And it was a strange phenomenon happened. I started giving away my business cards with my certifications there. By then, I had like 12 of them, major ones, like MCSAs, MSCSEs you have there. And I wasn't expecting for that. I started getting job offers from everywhere. You know, give it to people. So, oh, got all of the certifications. Would you like to come work for us? I said, man, I was not expecting this. So I went back to Brazil. I didn't get any. I came back in 2000 and for the same conference. And more job offers came along. Say, you know what, I'm going to pray about this thing. I went back to Brazil, talked to my wife, you know, have two heads think the same thing, and we decided to move. So certifications have been a big plus in my career. You know, it has been opened many, many, many doors. Actually, I wouldn't be here if I wasn't certified. So I encourage everybody to show your knowledge, your skills by taking these tests, right? They are, especially in the economy that we have right now, right? I believe everybody can have some education. Actually, there are some research is done, there is this survey done every year by Microsoft. People who are certified, they in average, they earn more than people who are not certified. They're more valuable, right, to the companies. So I hope that motivates you to consider get certified. So let's talk about the certification itself. So I assume in this session that you know SQL, right? You have not taken the test, but you know SQL. You work with SQL. You wouldn't be here if you're not interested in SQL in some way, right? So you know SQL. I'm not here to teach SQL Server, right? Or to demonstrate features of SQL Server or anything like that. We are here to focus, try to help you to focus your knowledge on the test. It's an interesting way to think about the test like this. It's like a job interview. So you're not going to be asked about what you do on your current job every day. You're going to be asked about things to be done through SQL Server on a particular situation. So I'm a Microsoft certified trainer too, forgot to mention that. And as I teach classes, a lot of people, you know, my students in the classrooms, they come to me and say, I took the test and I failed. I can't understand why I have failed. You know, I look back, actually, I have this feeling many times. I'm going to tell you a secret. It's not going to be a secret anymore, but I'm going to tell you a secret. I hate taking tests because they show me where I'm weak, and nobody likes to show where you're weak. And when I fail tests, I don't want to talk to anybody. Don't talk to me. Don't ask me about the test I failed. But it actually happens. And then you look back and say, where did I miss? You know, what was the question I didn't answer right? And usually when you see this kind of situation, it's because you think how you do it on your current job, on your current role, on your current environment. And the tests are not about your environment, are about what the question posed to you. So we have to mind shift when you go in there, you know, in the computer, in front of the computer to take the test. You have to mind shift. You have to focus on, you know, put together the knowledge you have about the product. So you know SQL Server. And now you want to get certified. So I'm going to focus on the questions in there. At the end of this slide deck, we have three C's that will help you with that. All right. I hope it will help you with that. So the path to get certified will be pretty much these four steps. First one, identify your certification goal, where you're going to be, right? You know, Microsoft has three levels of certifications, MCSA, right? You've got the boards out there, you've got the paper, right, the pamphlets with you. So MCSA is the first major certification for a particular technology. Then we have MCSE that shows you you can design solutions for their particular technology. And then we have the master, which is not there out there. It's another whole ball game, different. But you find which kind of certification you want to get, where I want to be in the next 90 days. Then you find the gaps. What are the gaps? You're going to talk about that in the next slides. What are the gaps? This is what's going to trick you when you go to the test. The gaps are the areas you don't work with every day. You know, you have your job, you do your thing, you work with SQL Server every day, but you don't use all SQL Server features. But when you go to the test, you will be asked about features you don't use every day. They will not have mercy on you, right? So you have to fill the gaps. You have to find out what are the gaps. So find the gaps, and then we're going to be focusing all presentation here. You fill these gaps. So my hope, I was very anxious about being here. I'm a certified trainer since 1998. I'm very used to talk to people, but this kind of session is very new to me. It's my first year that I had as a presenter. Because when we talk about finding the gaps, I'm trying to figure out which features of SQL Server you don't use every day. But I didn't meet you till we get here, right? So I hope that will be the things you don't use quite often, and it'll be good for you to review. And the next one is actually take the exam. I was told we still have 25 or so open seats today to take the exam, right? Remember, the second step is find the gaps. Since the exams here in this conference are half off, right, half of the price, I strongly suggest you to, you know, if you're interested on, to take a test here. At least you can feel what are the gaps at the actual test and be better prepared for the next time, right? Last month, it ended last month, we had the second shot. You could take a test. If you fail, you could take it again for free. It's over, so keep looking at the website. It may come back sometime in the future, right? So keep a look on that. All right, so let's start with the first one. What's your certification goal? Where do you want to be? Microsoft has changed this. You know, our people from MSL has changed this recently. And not so recently, right? A few months already. But they came back with old acronyms like MCSE. We used to have that in the past, if you have heard before, heard about this before. But the E stands for another word. In the past, it was a system engineer. Now it's system expert, right? They're more focused on the technology, and the technology than the product. So it encompasses way more than just the database product, but a few extra things surrounding it. So you choose which one you want to be, right? What you want to become. In our case, we are working this area here, right? MCSE for data platform. But there are other tracks too. So focus on the data platform. If you are not a SQL Server 2008 certified professional, right, ITP level, you have to take these three exams first, the basic exams. If you are a SQL Server 2008 ITP certified already, you can a DBA, you can take the upgrade path, right? That will show up in a minute there. So these are the first three basic exams. And then the next two, which we are talking about this one here in this session, for the solution expert. When you get to this level, the level Mike was talking before me, and I'll be finishing up here, wrapping up here, you get to the level when you have to design, right? You have to make decisions about how to better or best use the product. The previous three, they were more about, you know, how to use the product. You know, you're gonna have a lot of SQL commands there to look at and try to, you know, improve or write, not by typing, but selecting options, right? Here, you'll be questioned about designing. So you will have case studies, two or three, but you will have case studies. You have to read through these case studies and make decisions on how to fix a particular situation according to the case studies. So again, the three C's will be, the first one is the concept, what you know about the product. The second C is this, you know, what is the context of the question? What's the question telling you? These questions, they are made not to trick you. They say this all the time. For a long time, I have a different feeling. See, these guys are trying to trick me, but they actually say, no, it's not to trick you. There are some distractions in the question, but they're not made to trick you. They're made actually to measure, right? If you really can match an answer to a particular scenario. And this will be in the afternoon. I'm going to be talking about this guy, these two tests here about business intelligence, which I love. You know, I work with business intelligence day in and day out. And, you know, I'm not a specialist on other products out there in the market, but by far, SQL Server, to me, is the best solution we have out there out of the box, right, for BI implementation. All right, so here's the upgrade path. This is the path I took when I first got into SQL Server 2012. I took these two tests here. See the 457, 458. These two tests, they comprise the first three. And these guys here, this one here, 59 for data platform, the one I'm talking about right now, and 460 for the BI. But, you know, when they recruit me to be here with you, said, it's not fair. You know, I'm going to talk about a test I didn't take. I did an equivalent one, but it was not the test. So last week, I went back to the testing center. I didn't have to do that, but I went back to the test center to take the test and see how different they are, right, from the upgrade to the regular one. They're pretty close. They're just more extended, more questions. They're pretty close. All right. So what kind of questions, you know, how am I going to interact with the computer when I'm taking these tests? In the past, most questions were like, you know, multiple choices. You choose one or you choose a few, right, from the ones available to you using check marks or bullet points. It was used to be like that. Now they have improved it a lot, but I don't want to spend much time covering the kind of questions, you know, the interactions you have when you're working the computer. If you want to learn about that, I recommend you to, when the sessions are available online, to go back to this session here. It was presented by David Sunday morning, and they tell you everything about what's behind the test, you know, the minds of the people developing these questions, and how, and the kind of questions you're going to have there and you're going to be interacting with, right? I do have a few sample questions in here, but they're not even close to what you're going to see in the test. Yes? Sunday morning. The question was, when was the session presented? Sunday morning. Okay. And you can refer to the session by the session number, exam 101. I think the session name was Examine Me, something like that. all right, so you can take a look in there. In order to pass the test, you have to score 700 out of 1,000. So it's like 70%, right? Wrong. I put this link here. It's the mastermind behind the test development and the metrics on this test, Ms. Liberty, is on this video explaining how they come up with the 700 score. So it's not actually the amount of questions you do right or wrong, but they all have 1 point. They all value 1 point, but they have a way to weight these things, right? Because you have the ODs, you're going to see in objective domains, and they have some percentage in the test. You're going to have more questions on this, more questions on that. So she explains about that. The point here I want to make is you have to have 700. And, you know, in my case, for the upgrade test, you have to have the minimum 700 in all areas. But sometimes in other tests, you may have less than 700 in some particular area, but still you pass if the other areas you'll be tested on were scored way higher. All right? So you have to check that out. The point here I want to make is relax and take the test and answer the questions the best way you can. And the minimum score is 700. If you are wondering what 700 means, take a look at this link later. Okie dokie. So yeah, this is the certification goal, where you want to be, how that works. Done. Let's go to the second step, which is finding the gaps. So what are these gaps again? Well, the gaps are the topics that will be in the test that I do not work with very often, or never, depending on what it is. I work as a consultant too. I have been customers, they never haven't heard about replication, as an example. So replication, the guys working there have nothing, you know, they don't deal at all with replication. But there will be some questions on that in some of these tests. So we have to figure out what are the topics to be question about, you're going to have questions about, and where to find information about them. And you find that on the test webpage. If you go www.microsoft.com/learning, there is the main page for Microsoft certification and course. And if you type there the test number, in this case 7465, you land here, right, at this page. This is actually in the middle of the page where you see the ODs, the objective domains, you know, the elements or the subjects you'll be asked about. So when you click this plus sign here, it opens up and gives you the details. In the next step about, you know, filling the gaps, I will be opening these things and viewing with you, right, going to cover this. Not all of them, of course, we have just an hour, but they're going to cover at least a few of them in all areas, right? But the idea, the tip here for you is you go online, go to this page, open it up, and check what's in there and see what you're not familiar with, what you don't work with every day. And the good thing is, at the same time they show you this, like this, you see, you click then the plus sign and uncollapse, it also gives you some links there. So they have improved this page a lot. It was not there in the previous version, right? So you can click in here, like there is a tutorial in this particular case here for database security. So there is a tutorial about store procedures and signing store procedures with certificates. Cross-database ownership is a topic you have here, very important. Most people don't work with this. You know, they have a database, everything is inside the database. But if I have to make a join between tables in two databases, you know, how does security work on this scenario, so that's a great link about that, all right? So you have a lot of resources online. I encourage you, if you have not been there, seriously, you know, don't go Google, because if you put there the Test number 70-465. The first answer will be a calculator with the math. You know, 70 minus 465, and it'll give you some result like that. So use the Microsoft page for that. All right, so let's focus on the gaps. Let's see if we have the topics I have collected here will help you out. 7465 topics. First one, design database solutions. These are the four topics we have: design data structure, database and database objects, and these are the percentage. Remember I told you about the 700, right, score? And this percentage here kind of plays a role in how your score comes along. So the first topic in there, designing database structure. These are the topics we have in this particular subject. Designing for business requirements. So you see the keyword here showing up all the time, designing. What does that mean? Again, that means you are okay, you know the product. You know, you're gonna be tested about making decisions on how best to use the product on a particular scenario. Got that? On a particular scenario. So designing for business requirements. What are the requirements? You know, when I look at the scenario, there's always a section there about the requirements, and they ask like, you know, it has to be high available. It has to be some redundancy. It will give you some criteria that you have to accomplish. Again, give you a list of criteria, but during the test, not all criteria may be taken in consideration for a particular question, right? But it will give you all the criteria and you have to apply what you know about SQL Server to those criteria. Design physical database and object placement. When talking about physical database, what they're talking about? File groups, right? So you're talking about having tables, and you are designing these tables, you are designing files, data files and file groups, and you are trying to accomplish best performance for concurrency reading and writing, right? For concurrency requests from the physical devices. So how do you do, kind of a question there would be like this, you know, how do you do to get best performance when you have a database that has this collection of tables that are used every day and has this collection of tables that are historical tables you don't use very often, but you need to keep them online, but you don't want them interfering with the production tables. So there we go. You're designing a physical database, right, to place data in the right storage so you can have the best performance possible. Make sense? Designing table and index partitioning strategy goes in the same line. How are we going to get a table? And if the table is that big, how I'm going to split the table in distinct physical devices so I can have best performance when querying data from the table and work, you know, updating data on the table. Designing migration, consolidation, and upgrade strategies. This goes on the, there are many questions, you know, is one of the things they have in there. You have SQL Server 2005, and you are going to SQL Server 2012. You have SQL Server 2008, and you are going to SQL Server 2012. So what are the considerations you have in there? Like when getting the database, you want to get the database across with minimal management, minimal downtime. How would you do that? Backup and restore, detach, attach. How would you do that, right? So you have to consider the pros and pretty much the restrictions on the scenario. Design for SQL Server instance, when you have many instances in one server, virtualization would be a better option than SQL Server instance, and also designing for backup and recovery. I have a few highlights here, like when designing for this topic here, for business requirements, One of the areas they're going to ask you is, you know, you're going to design tables, you're going to design database structures, and you have to optimize space. You want to, you know, store data, but you have to optimize space. You want to use the minimum amount of space for that particular data you want to have in the database. So this is the kind of one that people usually get a little confused about, you know. Who takes more bytes, who takes less bytes, when I use one, when I use the other, right? Let's do, you know, just a test here. not actual test, but just a survey. Which one is the smallest one there? Small? Small date, right there, small date. What kind of information does it store? Just? Huh? Day, month, day, year, yeah, there we go. What about time? But we used to have people using this guy here, right? Date, which does both, right? Date and time. So why do I have date? Why do I have date two, date time two? Precision, one is goes to 2030, right? And the other one goes to 1999. So it's about date, a range, and the precision of the time. And I can't count how many times I've been called to companies, say like, we have this database here working with date and time, but you know, when because we use the date time or the date time actually that stores, you know, date and time, and when they do a in between query or something like that, some dates are usually the extremities are left off, because when you have date and time, if you don't pay attention, if you don't inform the time, it will be midnight of that day. So that particular day is not included in the result, because it has to be midnight. If it's some other time after that, will not be in the between range, right? So this kind of question will show up. Like you have dates, you want to work with the dates, you want to get, don't want to bother about the time when work with the particular dates. So what's the smallest one to use? Small date time, just the date. Since it's small date time, it gets both, right? Date and time, right? So which one are you going to use? By the way, I left this one here, right? It's the link, the official documentation for this topic in here. Most of these links will be on the comment area of the slide. So if you click on the comment area, you're going to find the resource in there, right? I'm not showing all the slides here, but if you, you know, work with PowerPoint and get to show the comment area, you're going to see more links in there. This is another topic. I found really great to have this topic in these tests, because it's the kind of thing people don't use very often. It gives you better performance. So this topic here goes in the direction of data storage is not a problem. You know, I can spend more space. I have enough space, right, on my data storage. But I need to get better performance when querying information. So we all know, if I need better performance when I query information back from the database, I need to do denormalization, right? Actually, analysis service is all about that, right? To get a bunch of things pre-calculated. So I want to do denormalization. How do I do denormalization on a relational database, not on analysis service, right? How do I do denormalization on a relational database? How do you do? Would you calculate everything you want to have calculated, right, and store in a secondary table? That is an option, but is usually not the best option. Usually you want to have that on the actual table, you know? So when they go to this topic in here, they will ask you about that. When you have it on a second table, like you said, an effect table, this is more like an index. You create an index using the covering option to have other columns covering other columns included in the index to cover the query. So you don't have to hit the table to answer the query. That's exactly what they're talking about in here when they call about the indexed views. By the way, view is not a table. So how come I create an indexed view? You create an index on a view, and actually the index will be the what they call materialized view, right? The data for the view will be pre-stored, like the gentleman there said, on the database. Works like a table, right? But will be materialized, and if there is any calculation done in there, it will be all calculated. So we give you a way better performance than working with the table itself, right, and calculate everything every time you request. What's the other side of this? I'm sorry. It can get stale, okay. What else? More storage. Yeah, but that kind of mentioned already, right? Storage would be a problem on that one. But what about insert, updates, and deletes? performance, right, on these guys. So when you get to this test, when I get to this kind of test, you know, as a consultant, I always try to balance that. You know, okay, I'm gonna get better performance reading. What about the best performance about, you know, doing the update? What's the main focus of my scenario? So the question will give me that focus. You see, you don't have to be splitted when you work with this. You're reading the question will tell you, hey, we are focused on performance and not performance of reading, not on performance on writing back to the database. So that unties, you know, when you are split, right? That gives you a direction, because that must be the right answer for that. So materialized view. And we also have the persistent columns. As I said to the gentleman there, I think I have an example here. I'll be in the next slide, perhaps. When I create a calculated column, I can request SQL Server to, when adding a row, instead of waiting to calculate the result when the row is requested, to persist that in the database. So I have the option, the persisted option, for every column when I write, create table statement. Another important thing here is when you do denormalization, especially when we create views that refer to tables that will collect information, you want to make sure that nobody messes with the underlying object after the view is created. Otherwise, down the road, someone may change the table and the view will just stop working, right? You don't get the results there anymore. And you don't know why, you have to research. When you check that out, someone has changed on a dependency object on the view. So every time you create a view, this is a very important tip, you use this schema binding. Here we go, got an example here. So see, create view. Well, this code here is creating a view and it's creating a index for the view. Here's another important tip for you. The top here says indexed views. So could I go and do like a create indexed views? Now, the right order, Mike kind of mentioned that, who was here in the previous session heard about that, right? The right order to do it, actually the only possible order in here is to create the view and then create the index, right? You don't create a view as an indexed right away, right? So that's an important thing to keep in mind. You see, it's the kind of thing you have to have your hands on, right? To get better prepared for the test. It's a very good idea. It's how I did myself to prepare myself. You know, get a good book. I'm going to have some reference for you there. And these books, what I love about books is they touch subjects I don't work every day. So they have the scenario there for me. It's just a matter of getting the product installed and try it out, right? And they have the scripts even. So it makes my life even easier. So here we go. Create view, sales order, view order, with the schema binding, has select. And there is a calculation here, seeing a group by with some calculation in here, and all the mumbo jumbo there. Very cool. So if I select this view, it's definitely going to take a few while, right? Some seconds perhaps, to get that information back. So if I want to get performance, if I want to do denormalization, in this particular case for the view, what am I supposed to do? Create an index for the view. Right. In this case, it has to be an index. Why? Calculated formulas there. So if I just create the index including columns, it will not help much at all. Right? Not possible. So I have to create an index for the view. Another link here for you for your reference. And this one here, the persistent keyword I mentioned about the column. Right? So I have a column for first name, a column for last name, right? And you know, I'm required to have a column for full name too. So am I going to duplicate it? Hey, denormalization is all about duplicate data, right? In order to achieve better performance when recovering information. So if the question is about that, that is a good lead for you. Doesn't that make sense? You okay? And by the way, you can interact with me at any time, right? You can ask me questions at any point, all right? About the backup and the restore. You know, the backup system in SQL Server is just great. You know, I myself never had any problems restoring information from a backup. Actually, I had a customer a couple weeks ago who had some issue with the database, like 7 years old database, and had to recover that database, and he was not able. I didn't get why, because when I got there, I just recovered the database, ran some check DBs on the thing, and was up and going. So, and they hugged me, say, oh, you're my hero. I said, cool, okay, whatever. But you see, backup and restore are really cool stuff. But again, when you look into the question may say something like, your management team or development team, whatever, they need to do some transactions on a database. There will be big transactions. And if the transaction doesn't go the way they want to recover from that as fast as they can. So what's going to be your strategy? Well, recover, database, backup and restore. But again, there are other features in SQL Server. Remember, this is about designing. There are other features in SQL Server that can be better, will be a better option in this kind of scenario. Have you heard about snapshot databases? Who have heard about the snapshot database? Let me see here. Most of you. Who use it? There one here, another one here. You see, not that many. So you have heard about it, but you know how does it actually work? Now, this picture here gives you an idea. The basic concept is another database is created, you know, kind of a mirroring, not mirroring, but referring to the original database. And every time something changes on the original database, the original information is copied into, you know, the original data page is copied into the snapshot database. So every time you query from the snapshot database, you have the information at the time when it was created, right? Always. So like in this case here, there are just a few pages in here. In this case, there are more pages in here because on the original database, more pages got changed through transactional operations. So in case I need to recover from this to the original state, which was before this one in here, the fastest way to do it would be backup and restore. Definitely the best way, the fastest way to do it would be the snapshot database. So that's a strategy we don't use every day, right? Not quite often, but it's very important there for you. Is one of a very important feature in SQL Server 2020. It has been there since 2008, I think, perhaps even 2005, but not that popular. Something that's new, and Mike mentioned that on the previous session, is the snapshot transaction. It's the same idea, but not for the whole database, just for a particular transaction. So you have to read the question to see if the if the question mentions is for the whole database or is for a particular transaction. Because you know when you commit, it's over, right? If you there are many transactions on the plan, so it has to be database, right? So you have to assess that. So there we go. Some questions here for us. I think I have two here. In this session, I have like four questions for you. For us to play with. So let's take a look on this one here. You need to validate rows before they are added to a table every time a new row is added using user-defined functions. What should you use? Now, this is a kind of text you're going to see all the time during the test, right? I didn't include all of them. Just there is an NDA when you take the test, so you're not supposed to take a question from the test and show. I wouldn't be able to do that anyways. I don't have that kind of memory, right? But I really don't remember all the texts that show up in here when you ask a question. But this is something important for you to keep in mind. Usually when they ask you to select the best one, what is the best one? It's usually one, and it's the one that matches the scenario. You have to read the scenario. Okay, right, with the proposed problem. So would you agree that most people, when get to this particular scenario, would use triggers? Would you agree? Trigger, right? You know, I have to do something when a new row comes into the table. What's the best way to do that? Trigger is the most common, popular, traditional, I wouldn't even say, right? For decades, people have been using trigger every time. Honestly, trigger is not usually the best option most of the times because trigger, they work on the running transaction. The information is already in the table. And if the trigger has to recover something or roll back from something, it will be like twice the trouble. You know, we get the data in there already and work with the trigger. With the trigger is usually an after trigger, and then you have to roll it back. Now, another way, faster, more lightweight than the trigger would be the check constraint, especially because there is a tip there on the question for you. You have to look for these things. Using what? A user-defined function. So you have to look into these constraints, you know, into these scenarios they lay down for you to give you a good answer. If I have to call a function, I have to create a trigger, and inside the trigger, I'm going to call a function. How am I going to call a function? I have to do select and the function. So it's a long structure, right, just to make a call to a function. A better way, lighter way, easier way to do it, of course, would be, in my case here, my best answer for the question would be check constraint. Does it make sense? So you have the, you know, we always tell this in our sessions, you know, if you're kind of insecure about it, and if you're unsure about it, go with your instinct. It will probably be the right answer. But you see, in this case here, your instinct, because your instinct was guided by your everyday activity, led you to the trigger, right? And I go back to my previous point. You have your knowledge, but you have to constrain it, right, to restrict it to the question you're having, not to your day-to-day activity, right? That's what tricks most people when they go for the test, at least the people I've been dealing with. another one here. Let's try another one. You need to choose, as Mike said, was after Bourbon Street, right? So sometimes I get these errors. You need to choose a SQL Server 2012 edition to address a company's 4 days event registration. Oops, some tips coming up there, right? It's not a database going to run for a year or two or a few months. It's just for 4 days. The database must be available for outside users and partners. So there will be other people working with me in the database. So if I put it, I have to create VPNs and this thing for people to authenticate and get into my database and so on. More than one answer may achieve the goal. And that's right. That happens a lot, right? When you take the test, they show this kind. They give you like 3 or 4. They all kind of fit. But you always have to choose the best one. Which one would be the best in this scenario? Huh? Azure? Anybody else? Would SQL Express work? With some effort, definitely, right? Enterprise? With some money, definitely, right? But the best answer, especially for a short-lived project like this, is definitely SQL Azure. Make sense? Right? So there we go. This is about designing solutions and storage and so on. Let's go to the next one. How's my time going here? Let's go to the next one. I have 4. This is the second. Design databases and data objects. Kind of goes back to the same some of the topics I've seen before. So goes for the database model, the designing tables, normalization, primary key, foreign key. When you create a primary key, when you want to have a foreign key, you have to have the primary key. So what's the right order to do the thing? Primary key first, foreign key after, right? Most of these questions at this test here, if I can remember it well, are command line based. So we have queries there for you. But there are questions when you have what they call hot spots, like they put a picture of this of one dialog box, and you have to click at the spots where we would do a particular task, right? So like you want to create, we're going to define the primary key. Where would you click on the GraphQL user interface to create the primary key? And that would be like a right click on the column, choose that column has the primary key, if it's a single column, right? So you can do that on a table, creating a pre-existing table just by using the right click there. So you have to click on the line of the particular column on the table structure. Designed for concurrency. I think I have a next slide talking about concurrency, so I'm going to save that for the next slide. Design T-SQL store procedures. That's a very important element for T-SQL store procedures, especially because of the data types. Who here writes stored procedures? Okay, most of you. Have you used the table data type when writing stored procedures? A few. Very cool. So this is a kind of new topic we have there that you gotta consider when preparing yourself for the test. Right? It's a subject in this, is one of the subjects there, you know, the stored procedures. So you wanna deal with a result set that came from, you know, a previous select statement or something or a function call, and you wanna deal with that one in your stored procedure. So how are you gonna send that over? You have to use the table data type, right? The in-memory table data type. Design management and automation strategy. I think I have a slide for that too. And implicit and explicit transactions. So let's see the highlights here. All right, so designing tables. Physical tables, temp tables, temp table variables, tempdb tables, right? Temp variables, and CTEs. Are you working with CTEs already? I go, got a gentleman there, a few in here. They're cool, aren't they? I love them, right? What's the main target, you know, the main scenario for CTEs? Recursion, right? Recursion is your tip for CTEs. So if you have a query that has to work with the results of the query itself, like making aggregations or partitions, whatever you want to do, CTE is the way to go. That, there's no way to miss that, right? They're pretty much designed for this purpose. They can do other stuff, though, but they're pretty much designed for this purpose. Now, what about the physical tables? Oh, those are regular tables. No problem with that, right? Just tables we create. What about tempdb tables and temp variable tables? Just make sure you understand for how long they live, right? For how long they are available. When you create a temporary table on tempdb, use the pound sign. For how long is that alive? To the end of the session, right? To the end of the session. Is it available to other sessions? No, it's not available. If I want to create a temporary table that is available to other sessions, how would I do that? 2 pounds, double pounds, very cool. And if I want to have a very short-lived, and that's supposed to be a small collection of information available just for my transaction, don't need that after my transaction, like I want to keep it in a variable, right? That would be tempdb variables. So in order to make a decision which you want to use, you just keep in mind for how long they live, right? For where they are available and for how long they live. That will be your criteria. For designing for concurrency. This is a very good question right here. It is not actually a question, right? One of this question from this real world. But look at this code and let me see if you can spot what's wrong here. Remember, is not wrong with the code, right? There is no syntax errors. But what is the topic? Concurrency. So what's wrong with this code in terms of concurrency? Is that right? What is it? Very good, sir. Very good. That's a problem. What will this cause? A deadlock, right? So you see, there is no problem with the code. If you read the code, if you get this thing and execute it, it works, right? I think I used the Northwind database for this one, I think. So if you run it, it will work, all right? But in a production scenario, the developer will be fine with that. But in a production, when it goes into production, you have 1,000 people doing the same time, you have a high chance to get deadlock. Very good. So this is one of the, you know, the kind of subjects we have when working with or being tested in terms of concurrency. So you want always to minimize the lock, eliminate as much blocking as possible, and of course, like in this code here, avoid deadlocks. Is that right? All right, more questions. Let's have fun here. Your transaction runs the same select statement multiple times. You need to access new rows, oh, that's a good one, added by all the transactions in the query table. Like your transactions in a loop, you do the same select statement a few times. And every time you run the select statement again, you want to get the rows that were inserted by all the transactions on the table you are running on. Which isolation level should you use? Huh? Read, uncommitted, committed, read, committed, uncommitted. Well, this, I will show you the answer, right? But this is the kind of thing, again, you don't use very often, do you? You know, have you seen this kind of, this is concurrency. When, especially if you're not a developer, you don't look much into concurrency until it gives you trouble. When people are complaining, my system is very slow. So you're having contention there, you have blocking, right? So then you start searching why you have that blocking. Developers, I'm a developer too, so you know, back when I was in school and learning about development, what was all about solving the problem was never about security and concurrency back then, right? You know, whatever was taking care of the database would take care of this. But we developers must be, and this is about data architecture, so you're leading a group, right, supposedly, that are developing a solution application. You have to lead them in the right way, designing the application. So you have to do this right, man. What are you going to do? For this particular scenario, is repeatable read. All right. Is repeatable read. Now, what will the other ones do? Like read committed. It locks the resources in my transactions being is using. And if anybody else tries to use it, will not be allowed. And if somebody else tries to add new rows, it will not be allowed either. Right? But the repeatable read would allow new rows to come in. All right? Updates will be in contention, but new rows will come in. So again, you see my point? Things you don't see every day, right, that will be asked for because they belong to the collection of features in the database. Does that make sense? So there is a link for that also on the slide deck, right, for the MSDN page with the detailed explanation for each one of them and how they work, right? On the slide, I showed the snapshot, but here I decided not to work with the snapshot. Next question. You need to ensure that a store procedure fails if an insert statement within the store procedure fails. So you got a store procedure, there is an insert statement in there. If you're running a transaction and that insert statement fails, will the store procedure stop working? No, right? You know that. You know, the insert will not get the data into the table, but the store procedure will continue working so you can test error levels in the store procedure to see if the previous command worked well. That's the regular behavior. Now, the question here is asking what? You need to make the store procedure fail, no other statement to be executed right after a DML statement fails. Who has faced this scenario before? Phil, cool. How did you fix that? Try catch and handle the exception on the catch. But that's the problem. If I do into the try catch, I'm not achieving the restriction of my question. What does the question ask for? Should fail. I don't want to treat an error situation. I want to deal with it. I want it to fail right there. I don't want to have try catch things in there. So the try catch is definitely not my answer there because of the question. It's the right way to do it, but the question asks me to do something else. So try catch is not my right answer. Throw? Yeah, throw would stop, but again, it will be instruction after the insert. The insert will not make the start procedure to fail. Is that right? You got two more. It's getting close. Huh? So it has to be one or the other, right? And this is another strategy you're going to use when you're taking your test. This is a very important strategy. I'm not ashamed to say I use it quite often, right? When you look into a question, you're not very sure about what it is, you go by elimination. Oh, that cannot be. That cannot be. So now I improved my chances from 25% to 50%, right? At least. So it's just one or the other. So which one is it going to be? X abort on. Is that right? Got idea? It's a technique, right? For you to, when you go for the test, you can apply this technique. It happens to me all the time. You read something, think, oh, that cannot be, that cannot be, that cannot be, this too. And then I go back to the scenario, to the case study, and look for the restrictions in there. And the case studies are more challenging because they have a lot of text for you to read through. I remember I was taking a test a couple months ago, and I was really, you know, undecided about two options. See, man, it's not a guess game. There is something on the text that will tell me which one to use. So I went back to the text, and I spent like extra 4 minutes on that thing, reading through the thing, and then I found a paragraph that, here is it. And I went back there and marked the right one. All right? So you have to be prepared to do this kind of approach. Third, database security. So design application strategy for support security. And again, in real world, not many developers care much about this. Actually, Mike spoke a little bit about this in the previous session, right? I gotta tell you, sometimes I start fixing the issue, you know, addressing the problem, and then I move into security. How am I gonna fix that, right? But there is a strong push, especially in this, on this level of certification, to use a strategy to create an abstraction in between the data objects. The data objects are tables and indexes. These are the two objects that actually keep data in the database, right? Developers should never consider the existence of indexes. So the only data object they touch should be tables, right? And the idea, the strategy, and you read that in many books, right? In Microsoft official curriculum too. The strategy is, in order to create a scenario where you can have high maintainability levels at the data objects, you don't want code touching tables. So what is your strategy of not permitting developers to touch tables? On new designs, more likely you would do views and store procedures in front of the tables. So they always call views and store procedures, and those views and store procedures will deal with the tables. So developers, you know, the code doesn't have to have permission to the table, just to the view. But there are criteria for this to work. You know, there are some ways we do this, it doesn't work at all. There are other ways that will work. Mostly in the test, they consider they have in the right way, but you have to give the right permission. Quick here. So you have developer A who wants to touch table C. But developer A, the code, doesn't have access to table C. What are you going to do? Create a view or store procedure, B. And this guy here will have access. Whoever created the store procedure would have access to the table. So can the store procedure call the table or use the table? Yes. This guy here, developer A, what kind of a permission does he need to work with the table? Execute permission on the sub procedure. You followed me. Cool. Right? So it doesn't have to touch the table. Is that right? Now, in case you it's a database that's already running for a while, and you want to get this thing introduced there. You don't want to have the guy again, the developer, touching the tables anymore, or when working with the tables, it doesn't touch straight the information on the table. You want to have some code in between. The option for that is you cannot change the code. The code is already working with the table. You don't want to go back and say, change the code and work with store procedures and views. So another option here is the instead of triggers. Who have heard about the instead of triggers already? 1, 2, 3. I'm so glad I'm touching points that you're not very familiar with. That was the goal, right? Because you're going to be asked about this thing, so I'll give you actually good tips for you to research. But they're not all of them, right? You have to research more. But the set of triggers, when I'm teaching this in the classroom, I usually call them the cheating trigger, right? Like insert on the table. It doesn't insert on the table. It's going to execute your code. So your code may be update to other tables, delete rows from other tables, but never even touch the original table because you're changing your data model and you don't have to get into hassle to change the business side of the system, right, touching your data model. right? So it's a way to go around this. Design instance level security configurations. This goes also in a new feature in SQL Server 2012 called contained database. Who have heard about contained database? Got one guy here, two, three, few, right? So you see, a lot of things for you to study, huh? contained database, they address a particular scenario that's very annoying for database managers. What's the scenario? Well, I have a database on a particular server, on a particular instance, and I have to move that database for whatever reason to another server, or even to another instance that has less processing power allocated to it on the same server, whatever the case is. But I have to move the database from one instance to another instance. When I do that up to SQL Server 2012, or before SQL Server 2012, I had a problem. What was the problem? My database users were associated with my server logins, right? You see the level? Server logins, instance logins, database users. There was a tie up to them, right? There was a link among them. So when I get a database from one instance to another, I have to remake these links to whatever the logins are on the new instance, right? This was very annoying. You know, if you don't do that, you get errors, you know, security permissions and all of this. With SQL Server 2012, they introduced a new feature called contained databases, where the login is actually kept in the database and may be associated with the server-side login, instance login, but it's in the database. So when you get the database from one instance to another, your DBA, production DBA, will be happy, right? Oh, cool, just move, nothing else, that's it, right? So best answer would be, in this case of scenario, contain database, right, all the time. So we have to be prepared for that too. Oh, I had an illustration about the start procedure B, developer A. I forgot I had this picture here. So there we go. See, John does not have permission on the table created by team, but Nupur has permission on that, and Nupur has given execute permission to John, so John can have access through the view. All right? Okay. Some more questions here for us. You need to move a database in between. I already mentioned that. You need to guarantee database users will be able to log in the database with minimum management effort. So what is it? Oh, yeah. What is it? It's there. I heard application rule. And database user for a contained database, right? So, come on, Rando, that was not complete. Yeah, it was not. Bad question, sorry. But that's the right answer if you're talking about containing database. Does this make sense? All right? Now, here's another thing you're going to find in the test. There is this, I forgot the name they give to it, but you got to have a collection of questions and the same amount of answers, the exactly same possible answers for all the questions, right? The idea is to give you a collection of options, but only one will be applicable to a particular question. So we have many questions, same possible answers, but different questions. This is going to be the case here. So see, question number two is another question, but the same possible answer. But for the next question, it will be a different answer. So this one, you need to grant access to a OLTP database regardless of the user operating the application. Which strategy should you use? That's a very unusual, by the way, this way for legacy applications, but let's say it shows up in a test. Application role, very good. Are you familiar with application role? You are, most of you are. If you're not, there is a link there for you, right, to read on. But the idea is the database just disconsider whoever has logged in, and we use the permissions granted to the application rule the application switched to, right, by code. And the last top, to wrap up this section, design a troubleshooting and optimizing solution. Design, yeah. So these are the topics in there. Maintenance strategy for database servers, troubleshoot and resolve concurrency issues, design, implement high availability solution. You see, in this case here, it's not much about the code, but it's more about management, right? Which tools would you use to figure out and deal with concurrency? We talked about concurrency before on code, right? Isolation level. Here is, I have concurrency problems going on, so what tools do I use, right? What's the approach should I use? Management. Yeah, so his question is, when I'm designing a new application, the best approach is to set up the security for the database I'm developing for the new application, right? Right. Yes, as a consultant, I would tell you, you want to keep it isolated, right, to get isolation, right, to keep it all on one unit of management. So that's the regular approach, that's good. Many times you have to work with two databases at once, so you have to know this cross-database ownership, cross-database security validation. It's a topic I didn't put any question on that, but it's on the test, right? So, you know, for as a consultant, yes, but for test preparation, you have to be prepared to work in the other way, right? There will be questions there, I believe, is in the OD, so you may have. See, not all topics on the OD may show up on your test. More likely, they will not show all at once in your test. But there are many versions of this test. So if you take a test and you fail, and you study more and go back, it's not going to be the same test anymore. You know, there are many, maybe, but maybe more likely will be not, because there are many versions for the test, for the same test. All right? Good deal. Okay, so troubleshooting and resolve concurrency issues. You see, this is more management, not code, remember? So from the management standpoint, where do I go to see, you know, what are my concurrency problems? And the push is to use the data management views, the DM views, see? DM views. So if you're not familiar, if you've been working with SQL Server since SQL Server 2000, 2005, you've been using information schemas or the SIS schema, right, with some legacy way to approach, you know, management. Yeah, for SQL Server 2012 tests, you want to take a look on the new ways to deal with that, right, to use the data management views. Very important, right? More questions? I think it's the last set. Again, this last topic here is more about management. So here's a management question. Which feature should you enable and configure? So session request address to a specific instance can be allocated to different processors, you know, cores on the server. Processor resource based on session request properties. How many of you have dealt with this situation before? Yes. 100% no. So just to stress my point, right, be ready for the things you don't do every day, right? When you, I have this bad habit when I'm reading a book sometime, come on, nobody use this. I will be tested about that, right, on the test. So since you never used that before, processor affinity, all right? You can do this either from the operating system perspective or from SQL Server perspective. You have options to that both levels. White papers recommend, Microsoft recommends you do this at SQL Server level. So always use Management Studio, all right, for this thing here. Last one, you need to design a high availability strategy to guarantee database access in an event of a server failure and minimize data storage utilization. So many options here would do high availability. But which one would do minimize storage? Because you have one shared resource to keep your data and both instances on the same collection of information, Is that right? Always on, great feature, SQL Server 2012. So I'm not sure, so got that one. But you have to use your concepts, right? Always on duplicates data across instances, right? So you have to use your concepts. So clustered is the answer. Make sense? All right. So that's it. Now you're ready. You can go out there, book your exam. I can after the session. If you have a question, I can answer right now. But if you need me, you will scroll all the way back there. My time is almost over. Sorry about that. Was incorrect? We can check that out. All right, yes. For the hotspot, I think the text for the hotspot doesn't say best answer because you have to click on the place. So there are many places in there. Usually when you have the GUI, you have one place to click. So I don't think so. You know, Gary? The question was, you know, would the best answer text show on hotspot questions? Yeah, I don't think so. All right. Cool. OK, move on. So these are the three C's. What are the three C's? Your concepts, the context, and we just have seen, right, in the previous one, and the constraints. You know, the right answer in the test more likely lies on the intersection of these three things. What you know about the product, what the context gives to you in a question, right, or the case, study case, or and the constraints. You have to have the constraints taken in consideration. Otherwise, you're not going to be able to untie some questions. Is that right? We cool? All right, some resources for you to get ready for this. Hey, Armando, you wrong reference there, right? This test is about 465, and that book is about 462. So what is this thing doing here? Well, there is no book out there for 465 yet, right? So the best book you have so far up to now, as far as I'm concerned, is this guy here. It touches a lot of the topics we have seen here, not all of them, and usually for implementation or for design, but you can, you know, acquire knowledge from there too. So I actually use this book to prepare for my own test. Another one is Official Training. No, 20465 is a great class. It just got released like 2 months ago, and I've seen some people, you know, talking good words about this one. The clustering there, there are many virtual machines going on in there. Unusual to see a SQL Server class doing clustering on the virtual machine environment, so this one does, so kind of cool. Visit the website certification, go online, you know, to check that out. You see on the page for the data platform, you have the test, and you have the discussion forums, and you have the prep week. I've been assigned to be in one of these discussion forums, so later if you want to find me there, Mike is on all of them right now, but I believe I'll be in some of them too. So you can find a way there to discuss and post questions, discuss with other people, and me included. Explore the training certification forum is another one. The link is there on the slide. You can check in there later. Talk to other people is always a good thing. And other exam preparation resources, you can go to TechNet. For Vision SQL Server 2012. To be honest, I stole these slides from Mike, right? I didn't get this one, so, oh, that's great. Let me share with the next group. And I just put in here. But MVA and TechNet, you know, the videos they have in there, they have people from the product group, you know, sharing knowledge in there. So it's always a good idea to check it out. Is that all right? I think this is it. Yeah, hands-on labs also available online. For free, right, from Microsoft, so they have virtual machines there. Kind of slow, in my experience, but they work, so we can, you know, have a feeling about how things work without breaking anything on your own company, right? Don't do this in production. Some resources, Channel 9, Learning, MSDN, TechNet, kind of mentioned that already. Please don't forget to complete the evaluation, right, to participate in a raffle. All comments are welcomed, right? Especially the good ones. But you know, whatever can do better next time, please write it down there. Really appreciate it. All right? So I think that's it. Thanks for coming.